Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Our next guest, John Wilder, San Jose Mercury News. You want to know what's going on with the Pac-12? This guy knows what's going on. Follow him on Twitter. Read him. You can read him on Oregon Live as well, and he's joining us now. Sean Miller out at Arizona. About damn time. What happened at Arizona that they finally said we can't live with Sean Miller?
I know. It's crazy. They should have thought that weeks ago, if not months ago, really. You know, it's possible, and I don't know this. It is possible the president came to this decision a while ago, but wanted to wait for the women's tournament to end so as not to take away from attention on their team that made it to the finals. But there was also a window of opportunity as soon as the regular season ended that they could have done this, and they've certainly known the notice of allegations since November. So I don't know. It's kind of anyone's guess what's been going on down there.
Miller will leave. Biggest offense was what, as you look back at his tenure?
Well, I mean, as far as what we know, what has been proven, I mean, he was presiding over a corrupt basketball program, multiple assistants committing multiple NCAA violations. The notice of allegations has, you know, a series of level one, which are the most serious infractions, and he himself was charged with the most serious infraction, failing to be accountable and to hold your staff accountable. I mean, you know, you got a business and you got a whole bunch of, assistants who are committing crimes. You got to get rid of the CEO if you want to start fresh.
Yeah, and I think you have to look at what the rest of the Pac-12 was doing in the NCAA tournament. And for me, if you're Arizona, you're sitting on the sidelines watching everybody else surge forward. Do you think that plays a role at all in the athletic director's decision here?
I think part of it, sure, is that Arizona hasn't been very good the last few years, right? They haven't won an NCAA tournament game in 4 years. Either they've been ineligible or they've lost or there's been no tournament. So, yeah, they've lost ground relative to other teams, and part of it's because it's been harder to recruit with the sanctions looming over the program. Now, they're still going to loom, but at least now you know that, you know, you're kind of clearing a path, right? So as soon as they get hit with the penalties, at least there's a new coach in there to move forward, right? And it's not just kind of lingering over Sean Miller for the rest of his Arizona career.
John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News, is with us. I keep asking myself, what can the Pac-12 do to parlay their success in the men's and women's basketball tournaments into something greater? What do you see when I ask that question?
Well, I mean, certainly, you know, part of it has to be on the court, right? So there's going to be some attention and positive publicity for Pac-12 basketball next fall that hasn't existed, right? Like preseason rankings. UCLA is already number one in some early projections. That's good for the whole conference, especially if it's UCLA. So part of it is, you know, you kind of parlay the attention that's going to come with the basketball in November into some wins. But I think that they have got to try to, you know, build on it with football. And to me, the thing that stands out is some of this success is because they had a strategy for men's basketball. They took several years and implemented a strategy, and it helped them. And the football side, there's been no strategy like that. They, you know, it's been run by Commissioner Larry Scott and his longtime Lieutenant Woody Dixon until last summer. And there was no strategy. And neither of them have a background in college football. And I think what they need to do now is with the new commissioner coming in, they need to see what worked in men's basketball. And the new commissioner needs to say, you know what, we need a plan to get us through the next 4 or 5 years. And we need to put our best minds to work and go from there, because it worked in basketball. Having smart people thinking about men's basketball, it helped. They should learn from that.
Wilner, I am, you know, I'm watching football and I'm going, okay, can football do what basketball just did? Are you hopeful that the Pac-12 is going to be in the playoff this next year, or how far away do they feel to you?
The football and basketball, it's so different, right? The postseasons, the whole structure of the regular season and the postseason is so different. It's almost, you know, it's almost impossible to do in football what they did in basketball, unless somebody wins a national championship, really. But I think that a lot of it's going to be, we're going to know by the middle of September, right? I mean, if Oregon goes to the Horseshoe and gets beat 35-20, and Washington's up in Ann Arbor the same day getting mowed down, that's going to cloud the whole season. I mean, to a certain extent, it's just about winning games. And it was about winning games for men's basketball, too. But the conference strategy put the teams in position to be able to win those games. And that's what they need in football. It's going to be a multi-year process, but they need to do what they can to put every program in a position to succeed.
Yeah, and that, you know, leads me to leadership in the conference. And, you know, where are they on this commissioner's search? The search firm has been hired, apparently has given some recommendations. Do you think they have a short list now that they're working from, or where do you see this search?
I don't think they have a short list. I think they got a list of 6, 8, 10 people that they're talking about. I think part of the problem that's going on is the search firm is doing its due diligence. It's talking to a lot of people. The presidents, obviously, the athletic directors, the coaches, faculty representatives, CFOs. They're talking to a lot of people, and they're getting this huge array of feedback in terms of what the conference needs. I don't think that there is any consensus. There's no clarity. And so it's hard for them to focus on just a couple of candidates because they can't agree on what they want. And I think that that's got to, you know, ultimately the leadership starts at the top. Now, the top is the commissioner, but it's also not the commissioner. It's the presidents and chancellors. And they've got to figure out what they want, and everybody's got to be on board. And then they target some candidates that are going to fit that model. You know, I'm sure you have some opinions as to what that model should be. I certainly think they need somebody who understands football at a deep level and can help improve the football product. But until there is consensus, I think that we've got many weeks to go in this search.
Is there any danger of that becoming a detriment to the conference if it drags out, or is it good? Like, you do your diligence because this is an important hire.
I guess it depends on how long it drags out, right? I mean, I would think it's perfectly reasonable for this thing to take into May. But if all of a sudden we're talking about June 1st and they're kind of starting over, then that is going to be a problem. I mean, I think we've already seen some instances where some candidates are looking at it and thinking, you know what, I don't need that at this stage of my life. There's a lot of work to be done. The conference in many ways is not in a good place, right? It's like the head coach looking at a team that just went, you know, maybe 2-10, 3-9, thinking, boy, that's a heavy lift. It's going to take a few years. I don't need that right now. So part of it is they've got to find good candidates and then convince them to take the job.
John Wilner with us, San Jose Mercury News. All right, so
if I could add one thing. All right, one thing real quick. I forgot to say this. If they had acted quicker, they could have hired the guy that the ACC just hired, which was a grand slam home run. Jim Phillips, the AD at Northwestern, considered the best AD in the country, worked at ASU, knows the Pac-12, but they dilly-dallied, and so they lost what could have been the best candidate.
Sorry,
just had to say that.
No, but that's important because does it surprise you? Because you hit on it. I think part of the problem is you've got 12 constituents here. They're all different. Cal is not the same as Washington State, is not the same as Oregon or Oregon State. They're all different. So how do they get in the room and make this decision?
I don't know. I mean, that's part of what they're paying Turnkey for to do, is to get them all on the same page. But you're right. I would argue that the range of schools, both in terms of resources and challenges, geography, all that stuff, the range of schools in the Pac-12 is greater than the range anywhere else, right? The SEC schools are more alike. Vanderbilt's a little bit of an outlier. But the SEC schools, those 14, they're more alike, you know, from one end to the other than the Pac-12. And probably the same with the Big Ten and the ACC, too. Makes the Pac-12 harder to get clarity, for sure.
I was asked this question earlier in the week. I want you to tell me if I got it right. I was asked about the possibility for the Pac-12 expanding. Somebody asked me, and they said, if they expanded, would they be interested in BYU? I think about TV markets. You already have Salt Lake City and Utah. If I'm expanding, I want to get Texas. I want to get a new market, a new brand that moves the needle. Am I wrong there? If they expand, would you expect BYU to be in that conversation? Or maybe it was BYU in Texas. I could be convinced it. Where are you on expansion?
I see no scenario in which BYU is in the conference for a whole bunch of reasons. But it's pretty clear to me that the presidents have no interest in BYU, and on multiple levels. But I'm with you. If they're going to expand, and you know, nobody else really works, right? I mean, Gonzaga doesn't work. Boise State doesn't work. San Diego State doesn't work for a whole lot of reasons. If they're going to expand, right, they need to bring in a program or two or four that is going to increase the value of the existing members, right? It's, if you got a revenue pie, you're not just cutting it 14 ways instead of 12 or 16 ways instead of 12. You need each of those 12, original 12, to get bigger. And who's going to do that? I mean, Texas and Oklahoma. That's really it. And I don't know that that's going to ever happen.
John Wilner, I appreciate you. You're the best. Thank you for popping on with us and bringing your wisdom.
Thanks, my friend. Take care.
There he is. Bay Area News Group, San Jose Mercury News. Follow him on Twitter, at Wilner Hotline. Good stuff. Yeah, I keep thinking about BYU, and BYU has scheduled five Pac-12 teams for football games next season. Five. And I'm thinking, like, is BYU just trying to be part of the Pac-12? Like, it's just saying, hey, we're in this. Get some familiarity. Because if I'm making a case to add BYU to the Pac-12, it begins and ends with Utah being part of the Pac-12. I've already got that market. I could be convinced to take BYU only if I'm getting somebody like Texas in the wash. Like, all right, you're going to bring in the Longhorn Network and make that part of the Pac-12 network. You're going to bring in a whole new market. You're going to get recruiting in the state of Texas. Okay. I agree with Wilner, though. The ideal is Oklahoma and Texas. And I don't see that happening. And, you know, we saw the impasse that they arrived upon when trying to lure Texas into the Pac-12 years ago when they added Colorado and Utah. Texas did not want to share revenue. They had their own network. Why do we want to share with the Pac-12 network? And by the way, probably had more viewers on the Longhorn Network than the Pac-12 network had. More households, more money. We don't need you. That's what it ultimately came down to for Texas. They didn't need the Pac-12. And right now, what the Pac-12 needs is to get its act together in football. It had a great basketball run. It needs a playoff team in football. And it doesn't have to be USC. Could be Oregon. Could be Washington. Could be somebody else. Could be Utah. It needs to be in that playoff. It needs to have the kind of postseason in football that it just put on in basketball. On the men's side, three teams in the Elite Eight. On the women's side, all Pac-12 final. And that all Pac-12 final on the women's side, let's not ignore the impact of the Pac-12 network on women's college basketball in the Pac-12 conference. It is a huge advantage to the programs in the Pac-12. Not only is the best basketball in America when it comes to women's college basketball played in the Pac-12, the programs within the Pac-12 can tell recruits, your games will be televised. So all the things we hate the Pac-12 network for, lack of revenue, weird kickoff times, not able to see your team. What are they doing? Terrible. They somehow got it right when it comes to women's college basketball. Because Scott Ruick at Oregon State, Kelly Graves at Oregon, Tara Vanderveer at Stanford, they can tell recruits, hey, this conference values women's college basketball. You can see it all. So how does the Pac-12, I think it's a big challenge, how does the Pac-12 hold on to that one or two really good things that the network does for it? Exposure in women's sports and Olympic sports. How does it hold on to that? Well, also addressing the idea that it has a horrible setup for football. Maybe it needs to splinter the two things apart and just say the Pac-12 network will cover everything but football. Maybe that's the answer. Leave it here. Culligan Water Cooler Report is coming up. Several smart listeners have tweeted at me and said, hey, is there a house for sale in your neighborhood? Maybe it's a realtor who's doing an overhead drone photo. No, this drone has appeared before over my backyard. It could be. I mean, it could be a realtor. Maybe, apparently, some of the inspectors who do roof inspections are now using drones so they don't have to get up on the roof so they can get a look at things. But I think it's more of a recreational drone user who's got a drone and probably doesn't realize that they're even being annoying if I give them the benefit of the doubt. It's just not, I don't know. I mind my business. I try to keep to myself. Although I did do something weird yesterday. I don't know if you guys have ever done something like this. We were out and we came home as a family. We come home in our car and I see trash cans that were out at the curb. And I've lost track of what day it is. Like yesterday, you could have told me it was Friday. I would have believed you. And our garbage pickup day is Wednesday, today in the morning. Trucks come. But for some reason, when I saw the cans, I thought they were my cans that I had left out. Because I always leave them out. I'm that guy. In fact, if I go on Nextdoor, I'm probably going to find, hey, who's the bozo who leaves his cans out all week? That's me. Okay, so I do annoying things too. But I looked at the cans as I pulled into the driveway and I said, oh, I got to get those cans. So then I parked the car and I went to the cans and I opened them and they were heavy and they were full. And I was like, that's not my garbage. That's somebody else's can that's right by my house. And that's fine. You know, if you moved it down from your house, that's okay. But I realized, like, I didn't put my cans out. My cans are right by the house. Like, I'm losing my mind, guys. And maybe I'm just too wrapped up in sports. And I'm like, I don't even know what day it is. So I said to Anna, I said, I went to tell you I'm going to bring the garbage cans in. I said, our garbage cans are, they're already in. You guys do stuff like that? Am I losing it?
I have before. The one thing that I can take away from this story, John, is that you don't live in an HOA neighborhood. Because if your cans are 2 hours past their time, you're going to get notified.
Yeah, I'm sure they're annoyed. I'm sure like people are going, why doesn't that guy bring his cans in? I do bring them in. Sometimes they're out like a day beyond where they should be.
It's no biggie.
I think as things go, like we all have to learn to live together. Don't fly your drone over my house and I'll bring my cans in on time. How about that?
Deal?
I also had somebody on Twitter who said that she shoots down drones. She lives rural. Like, bless you. Can I get some video of you shooting the drone down? Is that illegal?
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.